Saudis can drop bombs while calling it a humanitarian mission. In reality, I mean, in many ways, it's a play straight from the American playbook.
And the Red Cross is calling it a humanitarian catastrophe. 10 seconds, Toby.
Well, it is a humanitarian catastrophe, but Yemen was already in a state of humanitarian catastrophe, with hundreds of thousands being internally displaced. This is a place that has rapidly run out of water. It has very little in the way of natural resources. The Saudis are just making a bad situation worse.
Toby Jones, we want to thank you for being with us, Associate Professor of History and Director of Middle Eastern Studies at Rutgers University, author of Desert Kingdom, How Oil and Water Forge Modern Saudi Arabia. Previously worked with the International Crisis Group's political analyst of the Persian Gulf. That does it for our broadcast. I'll be speaking tonight in Colorado Springs, Colorado, at 7 p.m. at Celeste Hall inside the Cornerstone Arts Center. So check our website at democracynow.org. And all Monday, Tuesday, and Wednesday, we'll be broadcasting from The Hague. It's the 100th anniversary of one of the oldest women's peace organizations in the world, the International Women's International League for Peace and Freedom. Democracy Now! Produced by Mike Burke, Renee Feltzer, and Mate, Steve Martinez, Saim Al-Kahfani, Masoud, Ravi Karen, Dina Gezder, Amy Littlefield. I'm Amy Goodman with Nermeen Sheikh. Thanks for joining us.
You are listening to KBOO Portland, where the time is now 8 o'clock. Coming up next is Voices from the Edge Talk Radio with host Joanne Hardesty. Today we'll talk about the Tony Funchess controversy down at the PSU Student Union.
Portland School Board elections are May 19th. What are the candidates saying?
My name is Emma Russick-Williams, and I am running for Zone 2. I believe every child deserves a fair chance at success, and that begins with a solid education. It's time to recommit ourselves to education. Our community and economy depends on it.
Tune into KBOO April 27th through the 30th at 5:45 for special school board election coverage.
KBOO Community Radio is a proud co-sponsor of the 6th Annual Abortion Access Bowl-a-thon on Sunday, April 25th at 4 p.m. at Interstate Lanes in Portland. 12 registered bowl-a-thon teams will be bowling to raise funds for the Network for Reproductive Options Abortion Fund to help make reproductive rights a reality for those who can't afford to pay for an abortion. Again, that's the Abortion Access Bowl-a-thon, Saturday, April 25th. 4 to 6 p.m. at Interstate Lanes, 6049 North Interstate in Portland. More information can be found at kboo.fm on the right side of the homepage under Community Events.
We bowl away our daily cares with little strikes, little spares.
Oh,
KBOO Community Radio is a proud sponsor of the Portland Renters Assembly, happening Tuesday the 21st from 5:30 to 7:45 p.m. at the Central Library in downtown Portland, and Sunday the 26th from 1 to 3 p.m. at the North Portland Library. The Portland Renters Assembly is a gathering of people united by the burden of rent and committed to housing as a human right. There'll be a chance for individuals to tell their stories about skyrocketing rents, no-cause evictions, dubious fees, and other kinds of exploitation carried out in the name of rent. There'll be childcare, snacks, and a chance to get connected to resources for moving forward together. For more information about the Portland Renters Assembly, go to kboo.fm and click on the right side for community events.
This KBOO program has been made possible in part by KBOO Foundation members and a grant from Volunteers of America, Oregon, presenting a symposium on diversity, equity, and economic sustainability May 8th at the Childs Center. Keynote speaker, Stedman Graham. Tickets and information at volunteersofamericaoregon.org. And now it's Voices from the Edge.
Get up, stand up. Stand up for your...
Good morning, good morning. Welcome to Voices from the Edge. I'm your host, Joanne Hardesty. And today, I thought I would spend some time talking about a controversy that's taking place at Portland State University, one of the things that I see as a teachable moment. Before I go there, however, I want to give you some facts. In the United States of America, currently there are 7.2 million individuals incarcerated and under the control of the corrections institutions. Out of those, as of the 2010 census, if you are white, you out of 100,000 people, 380 white Americans are included in that 7.2 million number. If you're Latino, 100 out of every 100,000, 966 are incarcerated in the United States. And if you're black, out of 100,000 black people in the population, 2,207 are incarcerated as of the 2010 census. I give you that frame because the controversy at Portland State University surrounds an election for the student body president, and one of the candidates for that office has a criminal justice background. He's has two convictions for sexual assaults, for two separate sexual assaults, and he is currently running for ASPSU president. And so my question for you, my Voices from the Edge audience, is do we believe in redemption? Do we think that when we send people to prison, they disappear for life, never to return back to our local communities? Or do we believe that people serve their time and they come back and they are entitled to full participation in our society? That's the conversation I'd like to have today. So give me a call at 503-231-8187 if you'd like to join the conversation. What side are you on? I can certainly talk about being a feminist, being a woman, being a community mom. I can also talk about our criminal justice system and how unjust that system just kind of plays out. But I'd like to hear from you. I'd like us to have a conversation about why do we have a criminal justice system? Does it work? And because it does or doesn't work, do you believe in redemption? Do you think people go to prison when they come back? They deserve a second chance. Give us a call, 503-231-8187. Good morning, Joanne. Welcome to KBOO. Good morning.
Yes, Joanne. Thank you for your work and your energy. I send sooner, sooner or later, the way our country's going, my life's going, that my children, the grandchildren of me, will be in prison, either for being poor or for debt or something. But anyway, I heard that Alan Graf wrote a book, and I guess sooner or later you'll be writing a book if you get the time. And anyway, in the meantime, thank you for your program and your work. Bye.
Thank you. I appreciate the call, Joanne. Yes, you are right. Alan Graf did, in fact, write a book. His book was entitled I Inhaled. I have it. I have an autographed copy. I treasure it. And we will certainly talk about me writing a book one day. But again, the program today is really a program about do you believe in redemption? Do you or don't you? Give me a call, 503-231-8187. Hello, Aaron. Good morning. Welcome to KBOO.
Good morning. How are you doing this morning?
I'm pretty good. How about you?
Pretty good. I have a master's of criminal justice. I've worked in the system for a couple of years. I'm from the South, so I've been in Portland for a couple of years. I think we both know that our system isn't meant to rehabilitate. Mm-hmm. With that being said, I do believe in redemption. From what we're told, you pay your debt to society, you get back out, and you are supposed to be able to live a normal life. And that's not the case. I know of people, sexual offenders, and not violent sexual offenders, but someone that, say, maybe urinated in public. Well, those are people that are now labeled sex offenders, and they're on a registry. Mm-hmm. And that's not, I could say it's not fair. you know, the type of sexual assault, though, I think it does matter. But once again, if you do your time and you paid your debt to society, at what point, you know, are we supposed to forgive you? I believe really in restorative justice as well. Mm-hmm. But we don't focus on that in America. I spent some time, I got a chance to go to school in Canada. Their system is built to rehabilitate. Mm-hmm. So when the people get out, you know, they can get jobs. They can actually be active in society. Mm-hmm. It's not perfect, but then, like I said, our system is purely punitive. You pay for it, and then usually you have a stigma. And once you have that stigma of felon, that doesn't go away. Mm-hmm. And being from the South, having worked probation as well, what I saw was a lot of young men, especially where I'm from Houston, Texas. I saw a lot of young men who are, felons for possession. And now they have to pay restitution to the state. Well, they can't pay restitution because they can't get a job. It's a vicious cycle, and it's pretty damaging. So what we've done in this society is created a whole cast of people who are now second and third class citizens.
Absolutely.
And with no sense of, they can never be redeemed. And it's highly detrimental, I think, to society if we're going to live in a free society, but we don't. I think our system needs to be overhauled. But once again, that comes down to money and this government that we have. But we in American society, we say, and most people do get, some people get second chances, but for the vast majority, and especially people of color, I'm just going to say it, that's not the case.
Well, I really appreciate you calling. And as someone who's worked inside the system, you also are very aware that we have laws that actually prevent people who've been incarcerated from benefiting from some of the benefits in society. Like, there are no housing support. So if you're low income and you have a felony conviction, you don't get on a housing list. You don't get, I think we finally did away with food stamp support, but you certainly don't get education support. There are many benefits that you do not share because of that felony conviction. But there are people on the other side, and I certainly heard this when I was a legislator. Well, why should somebody that has actually broken the law have any benefits at all? You know, they're not entitled to those benefits. But the question is, what happens to those 95% of people who come back from being incarcerated? So give me a call, 503-231-8187. Hello, Cheryl. Good morning. Welcome to KBOO.
Yeah, good morning, Joanna. Thank you for discussing this topic. I've been dealing with this since 1997 with my own son, and I agree with what the gentleman just said. And redemption, it'll be interesting to see how it plays out with mm-hmm. the students at PSU, but the system doesn't believe in redemption, and I think the parole has been eliminated in many states. And from my experience with probation and parole, my son is now serving his second time, 2 years, first OSCI. Now he's in Pendleton because he's a drug addict.
Mm.
Yeah, he's done little petty crimes.
Mm-hmm.
And, I mean, you know, he's, you know, not a criminal minded. I'm talking really petty, stupid stuff, theft, you know, not big theft,
mm-hmm.
not armed robbery or, you know, anything major. So he's in there, and so that's just one example of what they do. But I think the parole system, more so than the probation system, keeps various individuals from moving ahead. I see it as a detriment rather than a help. Mm-hmm. What they propose it is not what it is.
And as a mom of a son who's had this experience, you can talk about, once he was released initially, he was given a list of things he had to do. If he needed alcohol and drug treatment, he had to go get it and pay for it. If he needed housing assistance, he had to go get that himself. He had to pay a parole officer to actually be the parole officer. Can you talk a bit about, like, the challenges when you get out and you try to reorganize yourself that you're faced just based on the criteria for your release?
Yeah, you're right, because he went in there at the age of just turned 18 when he went into McLaren. Everything was good. He was a trustee. He did everything. He was a model. But he went before the judge. That wasn't even considered.
Mm-hmm.
So model trustee wasn't even considered before Judge Keyes, who has now passed on. And when he got out, and I went to the picked him up. I came from Idaho, picked him up at 6 o'clock in the morning at McLaren. We went down to Clackamas County, and Darcy Baker, who is now the head of the parole system, I might add, told him he could basically not go to church, he could not go to a mall, he could not do this, he could not do this. And I sat there as an intelligent person thinking, that's not even realistic. I said, you know, excuse me, Ms. Baker, but there are, you know, youth on every street. You know, they're everywhere. So, you know, they didn't come from the mentality of talking to him like it was just this, you know, you can't do this, you can't do this, goodbye, good luck.
Mm-hmm.
And they would put him in the PV violation was if you didn't have a job. You went to the beach with your mother one weekend down here to Manzanita. Okay, got to be put in incarcerated for this kind of stuff. That was the beginning of what really, I think, messed my son's head up to where, how am I ever going to get ahead when if I don't have my own housing, but yet I can't find a job? You know, and he did find a job. He actually found jobs. But it was dealing with this system that was really the, you know, emotionally incapacitated him to where they didn't encourage, you know, anything beneficial for him to make it outside the system. It was more of still more oppression. In fact, more oppression outside of McLaren than there was inside of there. I mean, so you have to go through it. And I just want to say to the public that until you've been there, you don't know what it's like. Mm-hmm. You just, you know, what you hear, you know, and all this stuff, you have to get it from somebody who's been through it, like you say. And that's why these programs are good, because it's going to take a real, you know, uprising from all of us. And I've talked to other people, you know, in various offices where I've been, and it seems like all the stories are pretty much, you know, the same. A lot of it has to do with incentive, but after you've been mentally beat down to where you think you're, you know, just worthless. I mean, you know, it's bad.
And what?
With 18 and developing, you know, your brain
right. So, developed. Excuse me for a sec, Mom, but I got a question for you. What difference would it have made if your son could have gotten some treatment rather than incarceration?
He wasn't a drug addict when he came out of there. He didn't even start doing drugs until he was probably 25.
Ah.
And it was from all of the stuff he's gone through, he finally started doing drugs. He never did alcohol as a teenager. He worked at a bank. He earned $10,000 his senior year in high school. I mean, he was, you know, he was caught up in Measure 96, a date type of thing. He was 17. She was 14 or 15, lied about her age. Yeah, caught under Measure 11. That's what started the whole thing. They didn't bring in his character. I mean, it was they basically talked him into a plea bargain. I told him, do not do it. You're innocent. And the woman he worked for at the First National Bank just broke down in tears and said, this just can't be happening. And I said, I know it. I can't believe it myself. But it's just, you know, it's just made absolutely no sense from the very beginning.
So I appreciate you sharing with us
your
experience, because I think people need to hear these stories. And the sense of isolation for you and your son must be significant. And so the fact that you were willing to call and share your story today. And so he's going to be back in another year or so.
Well, supposedly January 2016, he's coming back to Columbia River for a six-month drug treatment program. But I just want to say another thing is that, you know, without family support, and I barely can make it on my own, and without the support of me, I don't know, he'd probably be dead.
Mm.
I mean, the thing is that the system, you know, a lot of this is put on the family. The families go through it right along with the, you know, people.
Right.
Well,
thanks again for your call. I appreciate it. Have a great day.
You too. Bye.
503-231-8187 is the number to call. Hello, Colin. Welcome to KBOO. Good morning.
Good morning, Joanne. How are you?
I'm good. How about you?
Yeah, I'm doing pretty good. I'm glad this subject came up. This is something I've been experiencing for the last 5 years of my life. I had broken the law. I was a contractor, and I lost everything I'd owned, and I had an altercation with a police officer at my home. So I ended up incarcerated, and I broke the law. I did everything I was supposed to adhere to what the courts, you know, said I need to do.
Right.
And I realized after I'd been out, and I had a family too to support, that the punishment isn't really inside the system when you're there. because there's not much to worry about when you're in jail. There's not much to take care of. When you get out, you know, I realized I had family who lived in areas where if I was a felon, I could not live there.
Mm-hmm.
I didn't have a job or a place to go. So I suddenly, within a short period of time, realized that I was no longer accepted in society to be part of the normal system. So here I was, somebody who actually had no previous conviction of any kind, that realized that people who've been through this. And one of the things I'd like to note, too, Joanne, is that when I was incarcerated, you know, in Washington County, I realized that what we considered a crime, you know, what people were in there that were considered criminals, there were a lot of people in there that had mental health issues or they were homeless and things like that. And these people came out literally in a system that just was like this revolving door. There was no other place for them to go.
Right.
It became like a home to them, really. And so I would like to encourage people. I'm glad that Oregon's looking at having a bill that you can't ask the question on an application, but you can ask it during an interview. Because I think that'll really help people understand that just because somebody's been a criminal or convicted a crime, I should say, that they are some habitual criminal. And one last note on it, the court mandated stuff was very difficult. I couldn't find a job. I had fines to pay. I had classes to go to. And I scraped by every penny I could while I was couch surfing for a place to live. And in the end, my counselor that I went to that was court mandated, this is the single most encouraging thing I got out of the entire system was, you know, I would trust you in my own home. So that was the only thing I got that was actually an incentive, you know, from coming out to actually start over again and figure out what to do with my life. In the end, the only place I could find a job was at a worker-owned co-op intentional community that didn't really care what if I had any criminal background.
They cared about what you would contribute.
What's that?
They cared about what you would contribute to the workplace.
Exactly. And when I have just left that intentional community after 4 years, and I had such a warm reception and going away, that coming back, I'll tell you one of the things that's difficult, you know, when you have a crime, and mine was an altercation with a police officer, is that I know every time I get pulled over, I have to be concerned about what they view my record as. So when the intentional community I lived in, you know, I never had to worry about that. I walked to work. I lived in the community. You know, that's one of a big fear when you become a convicted felon is what will happen if I ever happen to be in a situation where I'm involved with the law again.
Right. Well, I so appreciate you calling. And so what's life like today?
Well, I'm right now I'm in the process of getting my contractor's license back. I was a contractor for years. And I would encourage anybody out there that employs people to talk to people who have a criminal record before you make a decision by just looking at an application. Where I'm really grateful for is that I work one-on-one with people in their homes, and I contract basically any type of carpentry work that people want. And I'm starting to recognize that if you can get past the paper trail and you can get to introduce yourself to the people, that it's okay. You know, most people are okay with that. So, and as far as redemption goes, I think any human being can be redeemed, you know. I think the unfortunate thing about what's built into our system is it's almost a return system. When you get out, the requirements that you have to meet when you get out can very easily send you back into the system.
Yes.
And so, but I have hope that anybody can be redeemed. I actually met some very great people, which you might not hear that a lot, when I was incarcerated. They were really good people. And a lot of people that were incarcerated for nonviolent crimes that I don't believe they should have had to carry a felon record for the rest of their life.
Well, I so thank you for your call. I appreciate it. I am pleased to hear that you are headed back to being a licensed contractor. And thanks again. I appreciate you calling us.
Thank you for all your work, Joanne.
Thank you. Have a great day.
Bye.
And so while people of color make up about 30% of the United States population, they account for 60% of those in prison. The prison population grew by 700% from 1970 to 2005, a rate that is outpacing crime and population rates. The incarceration rate disproportionately impacts men of color. one in every 15 African-American men and one in every 36 Hispanic men are incarcerated in comparison to one in every 106 white men. Those are the facts. Back to the phone line. Good morning, Troy. Welcome to KBOO. Good morning.
Good morning. Yeah, I was just interested in listening to your program. There's been a lot of good things that have been said. However, I did 23 years myself in prison for two different arrests. I went away for the crime of bank robbery originally and then got out and thought that I could drink and use like a normal person. Turned out I couldn't. And the second time I went back, I learned some of the things that I needed to learn. But one of the things that was most helpful to me was that I was able to go back to school when I got out. So there's a misconception about the financial aid that's available to felons. Mm-hmm. The only time that financial aid is not available to a felon is if that person was selling drugs at the time he was receiving financial aid. So as long as you are able to, you know, get through whatever kind of entrance or admissions requirements that you need, you can go to school. You can get all the FAFSA benefits that most people get. And I've been going to Portland State University now for almost 3 years. I'm going to be graduating this next spring, and it's definitely possible. And the thing that was so great about that for me was that when I got out, I also was having a very difficult time finding employment. I was able to get some work, and then eventually I created my own landscaping business for a while, but school came along and really helped me to have the structure that I needed, and you know, the contacts and the community of people that believe in second chances. So yeah, there is definitely school available. So for any ex-felons that are out there listening, you know, that is definitely a good option. Education can definitely save you.
Wonderful. Well, thank you so much for your call. I appreciate your input. So answer my question. Do you believe in redemption? Is redemption possible after 23 years of being incarcerated?
Well, you know, if you look at me, it's definitely possible. But the thing that was really most important to me was that when I started my second sentence, which, by the way, lasted for 17 years, I decided right at the beginning that I didn't know how to live and that I needed to find a better way. And for me, because I was a drug addict and alcoholic, I found that answer in Alcoholics Anonymous. And from that point forward, I just tried to do the best that I could do and follow all the rules and practice the way that I knew that I was going to need to live when I got out. And I did that the whole time that I was down, and I did a lot of other stuff too. I practiced yoga and meditated and things like that. But the primary thing that I did was I behaved my way into a new way of thinking instead of trying to think my way into a way of behaving, which I had always done in the past.
Well,
you know,
very
so
cool.
That was important. Yeah.
Well, I thank you very much for your call, your advice, and for you sharing your experience. Have a great day.
Thank you.
Thank you. 503-231-8187 is the number to call. Hello, Francis. Good morning. Welcome to KBOO.
Hi, Joanne. I appreciate your discussion today. And I appreciate what Joanne, your first caller, said originally, was that the way I see it, the way our society is right now, we're either going to be in prison or keepers of the prison, one or the other. But I do believe in redemption, and it's a two-way street. We need to be able to forgive and not hold grudges, and that's what I see as the biggest problem right now, is people do their time, and they come out, and as your callers have said, it is very difficult just to make their way because of all the restrictions that are put on people who have criminal records. And what concerns me a great deal is the young people who are getting the sex offender charges that are, you know, anything from having sex with your girlfriend to, you know, I mean, all kinds of crazy sex charges. And then they get the stigma put on them even worse than just having a criminal record. Like the young man who's trying to run for president at Portland State.
Right.
I understand his record involves women that he knew. And I don't know the whole story, but I understood that one of the charges stemmed from a girl that he knew's parents. And there's all kinds of circumstances involved. But besides the fact, he did do his time. He's done his time. And there are groups of women now protesting the fact that he's running for president because he has a prior sex case.
Right.
That's correct.
That is correct.
Right. And they don't feel comfortable or something having him be the president. I don't understand what the concern is.
Well, earlier last week, somebody anonymously sent flyers throughout Portland State University with the headline, "Do you want a sex offender as your president?" And so that created controversy. But anyone who knows Tony knows that Tony's been very straightforward about his criminal background and how he's worked to actually put his life back together. And of course,
have there been protests? Is that true?
There have been organized opposition to him running because of his criminal background. Yes. Have there been protests? Yes. And my understanding is that people who voted already in the election are now being required to vote again. There's being a re-vote for some reason. And I just heard that yesterday.
Good luck to him. I am really, as you know, I have my ex-husband has been in prison for a long time, and now he's struggling to maintain out here, and it is amazing to me how much resources should be available that are not available, and the kind that are very dismissive, and persons are made to feel outcast. Mm. Just because they've done their time, and it's a very, very strange dichotomy in the city of Portland. I was down at the waterfront one day visiting with some people who are homeless, and one of the men down there referred to people jogging by as the free people. Although he's sitting out there, I can't explain how strange it is to be in a city that professes to be so progressive and to see the division that occurs. And it's very telling about how, as I said earlier, redemption is two-sided. The forgiveness needs to happen also, and I think for whatever reason, we have a very difficult time doing that. But if we're going to have redemption, we need to be able to give the forgiveness.
I appreciate the call.
Someone can actually be redeemed.
Thank you, Francis. Appreciate the call. Have a great day.
One thing I wanted to say, I'm sorry. Freddie Gray, the young man who was killed just recently in Baltimore.
In Baltimore, yes, my hometown.
Yeah, they broke his back.
Yes, I did.
And the news media continues to have to suggest or say he had a slew of prior drug arrests, whatever that means. But somehow they're trying to somehow make him a criminal to somehow justify the brutality.
Well, he was running while black, and so apparently in Baltimore, that's a crime. Thank you for your call, Francis.
Take care.
Have a good day. 503-231-8187 is the number to call. According to the Bureau of Justice Statistics, 1 in 3 black men can expect to go to prison in their lifetime. Individuals of color have a disproportionate number of encounters with law enforcement, indicating that racial profiling continues to be a problem. A report by the Department of Justice found that blacks and Hispanics were approximately 3 times more likely to be searched during a traffic stop than white motorists. African Americans were twice as likely to be arrested and almost 4 times as likely to experience the use of force during encounters with the police. Back to the phone line. Hello, Don. Good morning. Welcome to KBOO.
Thank you for taking my call.
You're welcome.
I was in a situation with a domestic violence situation, and my experience was that they don't want you out of the system. You know, another caller mentioned the revolving door. You know, they made it so hard on me that I almost failed the programs that they wanted me to go through, you know, financially, time, you know, getting there. I was fortunate to have a job, and my boss was super cool, you know. And, yeah, you know, they made it so hard on me that I almost didn't make it. And the district attorney in Columbia County, which that person was extremely unforgiving, you know, and it would just was my experience with the other people that I met that were in the same program. They're like, oh man, you know, I don't know if I'm going to make it, and I'm just going to wind up back in jail. And so anyways, that's my two cents. And I feel that the system is set up to keep you in the system so the people that work in the system can keep their jobs. You know, the more people that are in, well, that's job security for them, you know.
Well, thank you so much for sharing your perspective. I appreciate it.
Thank you, and have a great day.
You do the same. According to recent data by the Department of Education, African American students are arrested far more often than their white classmates. The data shows that 96,000 students were arrested and 242,000 referred to law enforcement by schools during the 2009-2010 school year. Of those students, Black and Hispanic students made up more than 70% of arrest or referred students. Harsh school punishments, from suspension to arrest, have led to high numbers of youth of color coming into contact with the juvenile justice system and at an earlier age. We're going to go back to the phone line. Hello, LJ. Good morning. Welcome to KBOO.
Hey, thank you, Joanne. How are you?
I'm good. How about you?
Oh, geez, Joanne, I'm just rocking it. I'm doing good. I'm doing pretty good. Okay, Joanne, can we throw a couple of things into the mix?
Sure.
All right. Can we talk about the influence of the privatized incarceration system?
Ah, yes.
All right. Now, prisons are being privatized. They depend on repeat business for their survival. And so, in my estimation, the system is kind of tweaked to set people up for failure, to make sure that they get sucked back into the system. And the influence of the prison industrial complex and the new Jim Crow. I told you the story of a young man I met on the MAX who just got out under he spent six under a Measure 11 crime, and he was working while in prison, and his compensation, Joanne, for his labor was like 10 cents an hour. All right, we have that. Second point. It's becoming quite obviously clear that there is a war on against Afro-American young men and people of color. Yet, in any war, Joanne, we have a body count.
Yep.
But there's no body count here in this war, because the high-profile ones that we see are the ones that are captured on video,
yes, right?
Right. But what about all the ones that we don't see?
That's right.
Right. And so there's no keeping track. So can I recommend a website to folks?
Please.
KilledByPolice.net, and that website has a pretty good overview of how many people of color are actually getting killed.
Wonderful. I know that the federal numbers are radically undercounted because there's no requirement for law enforcement to report.
Right.
Even in good old Oregon, where there's a law that requires the attorney general to collect that data, it's actually been dispersed to the Human Resources Department, and she has not actually fulfilled her legislative obligation to track that data and then publicize it on an annual basis. Portland Cop Watch actually was the one that brought it to her attention, and the response was, I didn't know I was supposed to do that. And so we will check to make sure that at least in Oregon, we will be able to track on an annual basis and have it publicized, because we did in fact pass a law several years back to make that happen, but it just hasn't been institutionalized as of yet.
Right. Okay, just one more thing, Joanne.
Okay,
All right. W.E.B. Du Bois wrote In the Soul of Black Folks, describing the experience of being black in America as a constant awareness that the other viewed him as being a problem. So, Joanne, I'm going to leave you with this question, the unasked question. How does it feel to be a, how does it feel to be considered a problem, Joanne? And I certainly will take my answer off the air, and have a real good day. Thank you for the show. And Joanne, what can I say? I wish you would run for mayor. Have a good day.
Thank you. Thank you for your call. I so appreciate it. So the question, what does it feel like to be considered a problem? Well, I think I've been a problem ever since I've been in Portland, maybe a bit longer, but that's how I roll. Back to the phone line. Hello, Jen. Good morning. Welcome to KBOO.
Hey there. Well, you know, I think that LJ's spot on, and I had a close-up opportunity as a teacher of the juvenile school program up at the Washington Jail to be seeing that actually they would let people pay tourists and come stay there on a weekend to take a look at this situation where they're actually want to keep people, the beds, they're getting money for beds. And so this prison for profit system has been arising. And so the possibility that there's any way to rise up from this demoralized feeling that people have been having, myself included, although I'm not a black person, my first granddaughter is, and when she was two, she said, you're white, Nana. But because I have had these experiences of having been, you know, a Jewish kid in the 60s living upstairs from Dave Dellinger, who start to be seeing how people can gather together and say no to Vietnam, and then to redeem, for like vets to redeem themselves when they think, whoops, I made a mistake, and that was the wrong choice, to have an opportunity to go to a school where there's not a whole lot of ego infestation with teachers and administrations, where, you know, I can have a grandson now, he can get completely demoralized after growing up in the country on a farm, to have to get stuck in a situation where it's all top down, top down, top down. And so the point that LJ was making about, you know, that there's a system that we're living in, if you're not the 1%, to feel that there's worth and hope in your life, that when one of the kids said to me, well, I said to my first student, well, I think you're pretty sharp, to a kid in the high school, he said, well, I wish someone had said that to me in the second grade. And so I think, you know, good thing for KBOO, like on More Talk, these kids, a few kids sounded wonderful, and they won an essay, but at the end of the show, the one boy said, well, it's really hell going to school. So then we can maybe have a forum to educate each other on the street or on the radio, that the show they had about renewal for spring and how can we transform our lives, that you have got a LJ and some of the people that have been calling in here, that we can rub elbows with each other. And I talk about this movement. I have call it the human revolution because I practice Nietzsche and Buddhism like Tina Turner and Herbie Hancock, that we cannot just get all stuck in the mechanics of zigzagging our way up to the top and have to buy into all kind of neurotic psychobabble to schmooze with people that are doing the wrong things at the top, which are probably more deviant than all these other folks that can't get out of jail. That teacher lost her job for letting her students write to Mamiya.
Mm-hmm.
Did you follow that?
I did see that, yes.
Yeah, so I'm saying that, you know, that we can speak from our hearts and be genuine, be transparent, and not be told that we're all like, that people can feel that black sheep are the good ones, whatever color they are, that their tendencies are to keep living room back in Brooklyn back in the 60s, and he said the 90s were going to make the 60s look like the 50s, so I have to keep thinking that we're going forward because of people like you. So thanks for opening this up. It's pretty awesome to really have a forum like this, and it's crucial.
Well, thank you. I appreciate the call. I appreciate the feedback, and we will continue to have these kind of conversations.
You're super awesome. Maybe you can have a show about Mumia and see, because we're worried we don't hear from people how they are.
Right.
Important people that are really speaking the truth.
Well, thank you so much. We appreciate the call. Have
right,
a great day.
Thanks.
Bye now. And so, what's coming up on the Boo this morning at 9 on Press Watch? Teresa Mitchell, host, looks at the anti-transgender initiative in California, U.S. warships on the move, and more. At 10 here, Eric Cascadia, headlines, interviews, and commentary with Chris Andre. At 10:15 on Flashpoints, how government lies are still killing Gulf War vets. Activist Kathy Kelly on her release from prison and part 6 of the battle for public education in the 21st century. Thank you, KBOO members, for your generous support. We've got another membership drive coming up starting May 6th, but you can beat the rush by going to KBOO.fm and clicking the tip jar and becoming a member that way. We've got a little more than 15 minutes left, and so I want to go back to the original topic of this program, which is the election that's taking place at Portland State University, and whether or not someone with a background of a sexual assault background should and could become president of the student association there. And I think really the question is, regardless of what the crime is, once you've done your time, do we believe in redemption? Is this a society that welcomes felons back into the community and says, okay, until you prove otherwise, we're going to treat you like we would treat anyone else? That's really the question for me. And it's interesting because I know the individual. I met the individual while he was incarcerated and reconnected when he was free out in society. And from everything that I've seen, he is a man that is putting his life back together. He's principled. He is an outspoken social and racial justice advocate. And for me, that's what I see, and I appreciate that. And so I would hope that people will weigh what he brings to the position and whether or not they believe his skills are the ones that Portland State University needs in their student government. Give me a call at 503-231-8187. You may not know that voter laws that prohibit people with felony convictions to vote disproportionately impact men of color. An estimated 5.3 million Americans are denied the right to vote based on a past felony conviction. Felony disenfranchisement is exacerbated by racial disparities in the criminal justice system, ultimately denying 13% of African American men the right to vote. Felon disenfranchisement policies have led to 11 states denying the right to vote for more than 10% of their African-American population. Studies have shown that people of color face disparities in wage trajectory following release from prison. Evidence shows that spending time in prison affects wage trajectories with a disproportionate impact on Black men and women. The results show no evidence of racial divergence in wage prior to incarceration. However, following release from prison, wages grow at a 21% slower rate for Black former inmates compared to white ex-convicts. A number of states have bans on people with certain convictions working in domestic health service industries such as nursing, childcare, and home health care, areas in which poor women and women of color are disproportionately concentrated. I'm going to go back to the phone line. Hello, Kenneth. Good morning. Welcome to KBOO.
Good morning.
Good morning.
I'm calling in to say that I really like your show and what you guys are doing today.
Thank you. I appreciate that. That's
okay.
It?
And a lot of the callers that have called in have echoed thoughts that I've been having for a long time about the amount of money that's generated by the people that are summarily locked up for nonviolent crimes.
Mm-hmm.
It's like, sorry.
It's okay.
There's a big freeing of, you know, this medical marijuana stuff.
Mm-hmm.
And everybody's clamoring to make money off of it.
Right. We're going to have some millionaire.
I don't hear enough of how many people are still in jail. Mm-hmm. How many family men, family women, children that are in jail still just because of this. And those people hit that nail right on the head when they say that we generate the paychecks for those people that keep the other people locked up.
Mm.
And that really has to be discussed, because until that, I mean, if I was a guard, I would have to say that, yes, I get my paycheck from, you know, all this turmoil that's created. And I'm probably sound like I'm babbling now. I'll stop for a second.
No, you sound like a man who is feeling this pretty intently. Sounds like this is something that you have experienced yourself?
Yes. It's a long train.
Mm.
And it's good to see that people are waking up. And it's good to hear people like you pushing hard. It really is.
Well, I thank you. Well, I want to challenge us. We talk about being progressive. I appreciate what you have to say. In fact, the last governor, I was all over a Kitzhopper saying, okay, we're about to make some white men millionaires selling marijuana. When are we going to open up the jails and let people out who are in jail for mere possession? When, you know, that should just be a given, right? The day after the election, that should have just been a given.
100%.
But so far, as you know, our progressive leadership has been deadly silent on the issue of how many people are now convicted felons for mere possession of marijuana. And then, of course, if you understand how policing works in our community, we know that the chance of people being stopped and searched increases based on the melanin in their skin. And so if they're African American or Latino, they're much more likely to be stopped, much more likely to be searched than their white counterparts. And so so know that the good news is that Michelle Alexander wrote a book called Understanding the New Jim Crow. A lot of people have read it. Now there is a community organizing companion book to it. And so the good news is that there are a lot of people that are starting to connect the dots. The bad news is it's not quick enough to actually save generations of people who have been impacted by this mass illusion of progressiveness.
Yes.
But I thank you for your call. I'm so glad you were listening today. This program was just for you.
I listen to you almost every morning. I've freed up my life to
well,
back so I can become more aware of what's really going on around me. So well, I thank you guys for pushing hard and push hard on those police and try to make them aware too.
Well, you know, they get tired of listening to me, but that doesn't mean I'm going to stop. So you have a great day. Thanks for the call.
All right. Bye-bye.
Bye now. Can we squeak in one more? Let's see. Looks, Jayla, good morning. Welcome to KBOO. Good morning.
You know, Joanne, I think that the people who sent those flyers out need to check themselves. Because if they really believe what they were saying, they will honestly stand up in front of the guy's face and say, this is what we believe. So I'm concerned about the dishonesty in how they approach things. But this is what I got to say. I'm from the South, and of course, some of my relatives have been to jail. When my nephew got out of jail, we gave him a big dinner because we're glad that he survived.
Right.
Because you don't always survive prison.
That's true.
And then the next question was, let's get our money together so he can get a trade, which was cutting hair so that he can take care of himself. That is what we should do as a community member.
Yes.
How can we help you? How can we set you up to be successful? Not nasty little things like what's done at PSU. I'm concerned more about the community than I'm concerned about him, because that was just wrong. So let's change that. Let's ask folks, how can we help you when you get out of prison? What do you need to make it? And not take some more and take some more and take some more. And I'm sure these people who did this think they're good Christians and they holding on to the right thing. But it's wrong. It was just wrong. And it was nasty. And it was undermining.
Yes. Thank you so much. I appreciate your call.
All right. Bye-bye.
Bye now. Have a great day. 503-231-8187. I think we'll squeak this last one in. Hello, Roger. Welcome to KBOO. Good morning.
Good morning. I want to look at this question from the point of view of, is redemption something that we can actually accomplish compared to something that we believe in? Certainly, we believe in it. This is a country founded on Judeo-Christian values. This very morning, the president said the reason this is an exceptional country is because we can take responsibility for our errors and learn from them. But I can speak to the question of whether redemption is possible, because I've experienced it. I had the experience of losing my license for professional misconduct. And it was not completely lost, but it was suspended, and I was able to take some time to reflect and to do some training and to go back to work and work successfully as a professional. And I appreciated the possibility that that was allowed me, and I think I was able to benefit the community that I worked for, just as Tony Funchess, as you said, is a social activist. He certainly can benefit his community.
Well, that is a perfect note for us to end on. We are at the end of the program. Thank you so much for calling. This has been Joanne Hardesty. You have been listening to Voices from the Edge. It has been my pleasure to see you. Next week, I've got a special program for you. We'll have David Dahl with Dave's Bread. See you next week. Same time, same place, same station. Have a great day.
Get up, stand up. Stand up for your right. Get up, stand up. Don't give up the fight.
Preacher man, don't tell me heaven is under the earth. I know you don't know what life is really worth. It's an all that needs a
The Creative Music Guild, Merrillhurst University, and KBOO Community Radio are proud sponsors of a weekend residency by Mark Rabeau, May 8th and 9th at Merrillhurst University. Renowned guitarist and composer Mark Rabeau will perform a solo concert on Friday, May 8th at 8 p.m. and will lead a workshop on group free improvisation on Saturday, May 9th from 2 to 5. The workshop is open to musicians of any experience level, and all instruments are welcome. Both events are taking place at the St. Anne's Church on the Merrillhurst campus, 17600 Pacific Highway, which is Highway 43. More information about the May 8th and 9th events featuring Mark Rabeau can be found on kboo.fm on the right side of the homepage under Community Events.
All right, it is just about 9 a.m. You are listening to KBOO Portland. Coming up on KBOO Press Watch, Teresa Mitchell looks at anti-transgender initiative in California, U.S. warships on the move, and more. Right after this.
This KBOO program is made possible in part by KBOO Foundation members and a grant from Portland's Gay Directory, providing a resource guide of openly gay-friendly businesses, organizations, and services since 1996. New smartphone app available for all iPhones and Droids. For more information, you can visit gaypdx.com. This KBOO program is made possible in part by KBOO Foundation members and a grant from Portland's Gay Directory, providing a resource guide of openly gay-friendly businesses, organizations, and services since 1996. New smartphone app available for all iPhones and Droids. For more information, you can visit gaypdx.com.